is Full Time. Radio City Talk.
On a daily basis here on this show, we talk about the fact that footballers interest us. I've just been talking to two different sets of football fans to talk about Gerard Deulofeu, the money involved with buying Michael Keane for £25 million potentially, Davy Klaassen, Mo Salah for Liverpool. And we think about these players as highly revered players because they are talented players, players who are making huge sums of money. But that's often where we stop. We don't dig any deeper than that, because sometimes we don't want to. You don't want to hear that your hero is flawed. Sometimes we don't want to hear that footballers are flawed as well. I'm delighted to be joined on the show by a man who's written a really exceptional article over the last couple of days in The Guardian about one particular Premier League footballer, which does go to prove that footballers are human. And we, and indeed society as a whole, need to accept this and potentially help this. Dominic Fifield from The Guardian joins me. Dominic, first of all, congratulations. Superb article. How long has this taken to get together?
Well, there were a couple of meetings with Stephen last week. And then we spoke a couple of times again this week just to make sure everything was right. Because obviously it's material that is very personal to him. And it's a very brave decision for him to come out and talk about it. I think he felt he needed to explain some things. His career has gone very quiet over the last 18 months.
And the Stephen just that you're talking about, obviously, is Stephen Cocker.
Stephen Cocker,
former QPR defender, former England defender, former Great Britain defender from the Olympics as well, and also spent some time at Liverpool when Jurgen Klopp was having the injury crisis a couple of seasons ago, and did the job that was asked of him. So tell me about Stephen. Tell me about how his journey has been, and tell me the next step for him almost.
Well, I think he can trace his depression back to his teenage years, really from the first time he broke into senior football. And suddenly, you know, the football that was always his big escape and, you know, it was fun when he was a kid, became highly pressured overnight almost. I mean, he was playing Sunday League at 15 and was in the Premier League at 19. So happened very, very, very quickly for him. And I think he struggled to adjust to that. He spent a lot of time out on loan from Tottenham Hotspur originally. He went to Bristol City, went to Yeovil Town, Swansea City as well in the Premier League. So he was experiencing different parts of the country whilst he was learning about how to cope with the pressurised nature of first-team football. And I think it's fair to say now that it's something that profoundly affected him, and he didn't cope with it in the right way. He struck upon a method of escapism, which unfortunately was gambling, and became, well, he tapped into what is clearly a propensity to an addiction to gambling initially, and then when the gambling got out of hand, he turned to drink, and you know, he drank himself. And some of the comments he makes on that in the article are disturbing, and I think he accepts that. He you know, numerous brushes with the law over the years. He has lengthy blackouts. He's had blackouts through alcohol, where he literally wakes up on a Monday morning and he can't remember what he's done post match from Saturday. And it was it's just a picture of a man who coping with his depression, and he's only learning now at the age of 25 how to deal with it. I do genuinely think that he has made progress in the last, let's say, 6 months. He hasn't placed a bet since December. He hasn't touched alcohol since March, and I think that's massive progress for someone who's been as affected by those vices as he has. But you know, ideally, he wants to be doing what he still loves doing, which is playing football. But he's got to find a way of doing that and expressing himself, and not being filled with this self-loathing, this, you know, the traits of his depression, where he hasn't been able to cope in the past. I think he's surrounding himself now with better people. I think he's finding advice and help in that respect. He's done a lot of sessions, a lot of Alcoholics Anonymous, a lot of Gambling Anonymous. I think that's helped him. And it's a journey for him now. And I just hope that he gets the chance to showcase his talent still, because this is a fella, as you said, who was playing for England in late 2012. A player that you look at and professionals in the game look at and think, this, he's got something. He's got a quality. He's a proper player. But he needs to be able to express himself, and I think he can only do that when he's sound of mind.
You're listening to Radio City Talk. I'm Conor Phillips, joined by Dominic Fifield, the journalist who yesterday published an article in The Guardian about former QPR Liverpool England defender Stephen Caulker. It highlights everything, Dom, from gambling, drinking, being arrested, injury, going to the Sporting Chance Clinic, depression, as you said, the expectation, the pressure of being an excellent footballer. I can't pick one thing out that was more surprising than the other, or dare I say less surprising than the other. What made Stephen say, right, I need to talk to someone in the public eye, i.e. you, I need to get this story out there? Is it him trying to deal with this, or is he trying to help those who are under the same cloud?
I think it's a bit of both, to be honest. He did, from a very early stage, say, look, I am aware of young kids in the game who are potentially taking the same path that I've taken, and someone needs to tell them that they need to go and seek help. They need to do it before it's too late. And that is actually a quote from the article. He says, they need to talk to their managers. They need to talk to the PFA. They need to seek help before it's too late for them. And I think that definitely played on his mind. He wanted to express that sentiment, but likewise, I think it's part of his. I hope the interview and it being out in the public domain is cathartic for him. I think he felt as if he needed to explain to people why a player that cost QPR £8 million in 2014 has just completely disappeared off the scene. I mean, he's still contracted to QPR. He's got another year, but no one expects. I bet he doesn't expect to see out that contract. I suspect there will be an agreement reached in the next days or weeks, whereby he will become a free agent and can hopefully pursue a career somewhere else. But you know, this is a player that spent the season before last, out on loan, 6 months at Southampton, played a handful of games, 6 months at Liverpool, and a loan spell that was curtailed when he had to go back into rehab. But again, he's not played. And I think the fact that he didn't play and he didn't have an outlet was another factor in this, in his depression. I mean, he's clearly somebody, he says he is a man of extremes. He puts his heart and soul into something when he feels that there is an objective to be met. I don't think he had that either Southampton or Liverpool, and certainly not at QPR.
And even Dom, sorry to cut across you, when the objective sometimes is there, it doesn't always help him. I just read a little paragraph from the article. He played 123 times in the Premier League for 8 clubs, with the same horribly familiar cycle of insecurity, self-destruction pursuing him to each. There's always a catalyst for the nosedive. And then he goes on to talk about the fact he went to Tottenham. He went on loan to Bristol City at 18. They put me in a city centre flat surrounded by nightclubs, 2 casinos opposite, and the kind of money I'd never seen in my life. I suppose the question is, Dom, how do you help young players who aren't mentally strong enough to deal with this? And how would Stephen like to help these players?
Well, I think the onus has to be more on the clubs. I think the PFA are getting better at it. I think that Clark Carlisle's worked tirelessly on this in recent years. I think clubs have to gain a better understanding of mental illness and that the effects that it has on players and on players who may actually go years disguising the fact that they're suffering, as Stephen did. I don't think he was in a position to admit that he was suffering from mental illness until quite recently. And then, you know, as soon as it's diagnosed, everything sort of falls into place, and it's almost like an explanation as to what's been going wrong. But clubs, there is a duty of care for these clubs. They, you know, even when a player goes out on loan to a club, and you know, so effectively they're employed by a rival club, there's still a duty of care on the club that is seeing them every day around the training ground, on the playing pitch, in the dressing room. I mean, they have to get a better understanding of how these people work. I know it's difficult. I know football clubs, professional entities, they're there to win. They need the first team that's winning, winning games, and that is the be all and end all. But when you hear some of the testimonies that he's come out with, you know, where managers have, well, club officials have told him, you know, we're aware that you're in a casino until 3 a.m, but as long as it doesn't affect your performances out on the pitch, that's fine. That's ludicrous. I mean, that's utterly ludicrous. Something is wrong there. Something is going badly wrong, and that should set alarm bells ringing at these clubs. Why is this person behaving this way? There is a reason. It's not just because their money is being flung at them. There's something that is making them or compelling them to go and behave like this. And I think that clubs have to learn that, and they have to accept it, and they have to do more to help all their players. It's difficult. It's really, really complicated issue. And, you know, football as an industry is only really just coming to terms with mental health issues. But I don't think Stephen Caulker will be alone in what he's experienced. I suspect that he knows, and I suspect that there are a lot of other fellow professionals out there suffering the same problems.
I'm looking at what one chairman said to Stephen, and it goes back to the problem you were saying there now, that the clubs aren't fully aware of A, this happening, and B, how to deal with it. Daniel Levy was almost giving off to him, saying, look, you're going through this patch of, you know, it's misbehaviour as far as he was concerned. You're going only down, not up. Instead of reaching out to him, and that's not really me being disrespectful for Daniel Levy, it's me saying, look, the education wasn't there amongst the clubs. So if now we are in the 21st century, now we're open, we're talking about it on this very station, we dedicate an entire show to mental health issues. It's starting to get more media coverage. We're all starting to open up and talk about the people in our own lives. Are the football clubs doing it to the extent that we need them to?
Not yet.
Yet, Dominic? Why is that word in there? And that's not your fault, but why not yet? Because we know it's out there.
No, I quite agree. And I fear that the bottom line is that a football club's priorities are something very different. A football club has almost got an old school. I mean, everybody says football's a very macho game still. It's all about, you know, roll your sleeves out, get on with it, you know, go and win the next game. If you have a setback, just go out there and express yourself, as indeed people saying to Stephen over the years. That's the wrong attitude, clearly. It's a strange one, because I suspect there are supporters. I know for a fact that a lot of reaction on Twitter to the story, to Stephen's story, a lot of people have come out and said, I'm sorry I gave him that dog's abuse now from the terraces for his performances, because I didn't know. I didn't realise this was happening. Well, maybe it's not just the club. Maybe it's supporters as well. We have to think about, you know, how we as fans react to poor performances. And these guys, as you said in your introduction, they're not impervious to criticism. They're not going out there with, you know, willingly failing. Sometimes things are going wrong, but they can't control in a day-to-day basis. And it's a mental issue. It may be physical as well. It's invariably the mental side of things which sets players apart. And maybe as supporters as well as clubs have to learn that. And attitude has to change across the board. But the bottom line is, at Premier League level in particular, it's all about either winning the Premier League or staying in the Premier League. And you know, if a player, to use the old school way, it suddenly appears fragile, appears weak, and is making mistakes, and is not, you know, delivering what the club needs them to deliver, then on a callous level, I imagine there are clubs still there that think, well, actually, we'd rather be shot of him than have to do something about it to help him.
So QPR have signed him off, so to speak, until July, is it? They've given him space to go, to work on the issues he's having. I'm sure QPR are helping him as well. Come the end of July, will Stephen be both physically and mentally fit enough to go back into the world of football, do you suspect? Because, you know, this goes to show, like I said at the very start of this, that footballers are normal. Stephen Caulker is down at your local goal centre now, training with an ex-friend of his to get himself fit, just the two of them trying to get themselves back into some sort of shape. So footballers aren't superheroes. So I suppose my point is, when are we likely to see Steve back on the pitch and hopefully doing what he did best?
Well, in fairness to Stephen, he missed a lot of last season with a hip injury. which developed on the back of a groin problem. And that,
that was
played
a,
its part.
That was a caveat, wasn't it, to,
yeah,
to a lot
exactly,
of this,
exactly. The fact that he wasn't, he couldn't play, he couldn't train, he couldn't make an impact. He felt guilty on that, and that just increased the self-loathing and sent him into another spiral down into depression. He's been training all summer with Drew Broughton. He's an ex-player, but he's now specialises both in physical and mental, I don't know how you say it, coaching, I guess, I think he is helping Stephen on and off the pitch, let's put it like that. And I think he is approaching full fitness after on the back of the hip problem. So physically, I don't think there'll be an issue with Stephen Caulker. And you know, I just like to think that clubs look at him and remind themselves that this was a player that was playing for England 4 years ago and that has got over 120 Premier League appearances under him, and he's still only 25.
Okay, that's the bit that really surprises me,
isn't it?
That he's just 25.
Yeah, I mean, he's got 10 years ahead of him at the top level, potentially. I mean, he's, and you talk to pressers and they see something in him. I mean, you can look at the managers he's worked under, they've seen something in him as well. I mean, whether that be Brendan Rodgers at Swansea or Jurgen Klopp bringing him to Liverpool, Ronald Koeman at Southampton. I mean, you guys on Merseyside know the calibre of these managers that we're talking about here. And then they've all seen the quality there that he can offer when he is in the right place to offer it. And the environment's right. And he, you know, is content in himself. And I really, really hope that he gets himself back on track and gets back to, and can offer an indication and show people the quality that he can deliver on a football pitch. Because I have no doubt that he can still do that. It may be that he starts life in the Championship and works his way back up into Premier League level, because the last few years have damaged him and have damaged his reputation. And I hope on some level that by doing the article, he's at least offered an explanation to people who may have been sceptical as to why his career had nosedived.
Believe me, I'm one of them. I've watched him closely, and when he was involved with Liverpool, I was always hoping he'd kicked on because he was almost a cult figure with Liverpool. They enjoyed the fact he was the centre half, and Jurgen Klopp played him up front a few times, and it was two or three times he was a whisker away from opening his Liverpool account, which was it made him a cult hero across Anfield. And look, do a couple of things for me, will you, Dom? First of all, if you are talking to Stephen, and I'm sure you will, I'm sure you've got lots of good wishes, please pass him on our good wishes. We'll send him a wee tweet of support here as well. And we look forward to seeing him back on the pitch. But secondly, listen, there's going to be people listening to this at the moment who are going through similar things that Stephen was. Stephen's a millionaire footballer, but he still had to deal with these everyday issues. I'm reading here at the end of the article. I don't want to type my name into Google and see humiliating stories. I want people to remember I'm a footballer who was good enough to represent his country at 20, and I've still got 10 years left in the game. And it goes on to talk about him. He wants to see his son seeing him as a proper human being and someone who's capable of many different things. And we're urging, Dom, I suppose, people, if they are feeling like what is the feeling, I suppose I can ask you, what is the feeling that Stephen had that some people listening to this could be feeling now that should go and seek help?
I think he just hated himself. It's difficult to say out loud. I mean, I think it's difficult for us to talk about. I mean, everybody has their own emotion, but with him, it was self-loathing. It was he was up all night, just full of regret and playing over mistakes he'd made, whether they be individual mistakes in games or mistakes he'd made off the pitch. And it just, he was going sleepless nights, and that was the spiral that took him into gambling as a form of escape, and the addiction was very obvious. I mean, in his case, it was very obvious. We're talking hundreds of thousands of pounds, obvious, and the drinking with the blackouts. But it started with the self-loathing, and look, it's a difficult subject for people to talk about. Weirdly, it's a difficult subject for men to talk about in particular.
Yeah.
There are numbers on the bottom of that article for Samaritans.
Just the point I was going to make. I've just tweeted the article. I've just tweeted the article in at Radio City Talk. The entire article's there. Go to the very bottom of the Samaritans page. It's there. There's suicide prevention hotlines in USA and Australia, if you know anyone who might take advantage of those. Listen, Dom, we have to go to the news here. Thank you so much for coming on. Can I congratulate you for bringing this subject to the fore again? And we look forward to reading more of your brilliant stuff in the future. All right?
Pleasure. Thanks very much. Cheers, then.
This is Full Time. Radio City Talk.